The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The next time you go to a restaurant to eat, take a look at the families that have little children there with them, or at a supermarket, or anywhere out in public, maybe on an airliner. And when you see a parent making excuses for a little kid, oh, don't mind him, he's just tired, or making meaningless whispering noises like shh, like an escaping gas jet or something like this, trying to quiet a kid who is drumming away with his spoon on a tray in a restaurant, or perhaps bouncing a kid on an airliner who is screaming and beating at this parent with his fists and disrupting and annoying everybody else's reverie, whether he's listening all plugged in to the music or the movie that is going on or trying to eat his meal. Next time you're out in public, observe. Try to really notice the way most parents overlook all of these activities of their children. They're obviously noisy and embarrassing and perturbing and disturbing to other people about them. I remember so well one time I was in a local restaurant in Pasadena. I was teaching a course in family relations and child rearing at the time, as a matter of fact, and I was eating with a fellow professor of mine. It was a teacher of the Spanish language. We went to a local restaurant in Pasadena. Some of the waitresses were divorcees. One in particular was middle-aged. She was quite well-known by all of us, and she came over to the table and said, "Look at that little kid over there. There are about three young kids and I think two women, as I recall." One of them was jumping up and down, running around the room, ran out into the street. The mother had to get up out of the restaurant, walk out into the street to retrieve this kid. She would then try to talk over the noise they were making, and finally this little monster was visiting all the other tables, looking up at people and creating every kind of disturbance, ended up by stomping on the foot of this waitress, and she was just about ready to backhand this little kid. He came over to my table and looked up at me, and I looked at him and I said, "You little monster, you get out of here, I'm going to give you the back of my hand." Well, he turned around and kind of fled and hid behind his mother. And that was a very bad thing to do, I'm sure, because the kid probably could have taken me up on it, and of course there wasn't a thing I could have done. He didn't know that I was bluffing, but I imagine it was the first time that this particular child had ever been met with a threat of any kind of physical retaliation for what he was doing busily in this restaurant. Had he been allowed to just run the place free without any kind of constraints on him whatsoever, it could have been a complete shambles by mid-afternoon. So next time you're out, observe. Because what you are observing is that little tiny kid that can't be quieted, the one that must have his own way, the one who just toppled a pyramid of canned goods in the supermarket, the one who was beating away with his spoon and causing a disturbance in a restaurant, the one who was running out into the street or running away from his mother when she says, "Come here, Johnny." That's the kid who a few years from then is going to strangle your cat, let the air out of your tires, or worse yet, slash the tires, steal your car, maybe even, would you believe, hold you up at gunpoint and take your life savings away from you, or maybe even shoot you in the stomach with a gun. Because criminals are not born. They are made. You know who makes them? Parents do. It all begins in the home. That's where the very first contact with authority, with love, with anything comes, when we are born and brought into this world. It all begins in the home. That's where it all starts. The first awareness of sight and sound and smell and activity. The first consciousness of even being, of being alive and wondering what we are. The little kid who is lying in the crib and gooing and clucking and making little sounds to himself, who sees his hand goes by and then wonders what that was, who has no control over his motor facilities, no coordination yet, no control over his body appetites or passions or necessities, as the case may be. That little kid could grow up to be another of America's youthful criminals. The 16 and 15 age category that represent fully 39, 40, 45, 50 and more percent of some of the major index crimes, crimes of violence, crimes against the person, crimes against property, auto theft, arson, rape, muggings, murder, you name it, you're going to find teenagers very high, if not towering over all other representative age categories for crime. We all know we're in the midst of a youthful crime wave, an avalanche, a tidal wave of child crime that more and more the big cities are finding the organization of youth gangs, and oftentimes along racial and ethnic lines, as well as along socioeconomic and ghetto areas and the confines of big cities that are well known to spawn a great deal of that type of criminal activity. Unfortunately, the screams for more probation officers, for more detention houses, for more policemen, more judges, harder and stricter laws, or more public swimming pools and more softball diamonds are not getting the job done. In the first place, the revolving door system of justice, with a light tap on the wrist when the kid is caught with a car that is supposed to be stolen, but now they call it just joyriding, or maybe even if he actually robs a liquor store, a candy store, or a drug store, he can then be put on probation and assigned a probation officer. 10, 15, 25 different serious crimes for a youth down from 11 to 16 are not unusual. You got about 75 to 80% of the police force spending its time on 2 to 3 to 5% of the population that are the repeaters. And by the time the kid is finally arrested for murder, he may have a rap sheet, a list of prior arrests for every one of the major crimes short of murder, possibly even including assault with a deadly weapon, and maybe up to 15 or more separate arrests by the time he's hauled into jail for murder. In the meantime, he was living somewhere, not just camping out, the chances are. In the meantime, he was going home at night. He was eating whatever his mother or his dad or both dished out for him. He probably has brothers and sisters. He came from some place. He belongs to somebody. He is somebody's kid. Society is talking about dealing with the effects. Let's put them in better or bigger jails. Let's have stricter discipline and longer sentences. And let's stop this revolving door system of justice, which is no justice at all, but permissiveness, which encourages the repetition of crime. It seems to me it's about time we ask, what is the cause? Who is responsible? Because it all begins at childhood. You learn a great deal the first day of your life, but you forget it all by the second day. You learn proportionately more the second day, proportionately, less, the third day, the fourth day, and so on. You actually learn more proportionately in your first 3 and 5 years of life than you do any other part of your life, but it begins to become cumulative, and so you do learn as you go along. In experiments with animals and birds, they have found animals and birds can obey simple commands. Dog trainers are now beginning to realize that you can just with a hand gesture cause a dog to obey meticulously. Those who show dogs know exactly how this is done. You can buy yourself a German short-haired pointer or a Labrador retriever, and you can take them out to one of these places where they're professional dog trainers, and they will train that dog. So you can come and be trained. If they can teach you the proper hand gestures, then you, as the owner of the dog, can make the gestures and the dog will obey you. But sometimes even the owners have to be trained. There was an experiment some years ago of a man who was a falconer who had a couple of baby hawks or falcons. I don't know what kind, but they were very, very fierce birds, the type that could be used for sporting, the type that would kill, that are predators, that would kill mice and rabbits and so on. He put them in a totally dark enclosure. And he began, as he would walk toward the enclosure at feeding time, to talk to them in soft, crooning tones to try to get their confidence. And he repeated this as he would give them food. Gradually then, they began to associate the voice of this trainer with the feeding time. And they began to make certain noises, as little hawks will, expecting that feeding, and began to identify with him. He began letting a little bit of light in and began approaching them a little more, trying to touch them or leaving his hand in the cage a little longer. And he began to use simple words. It was proved by this trainer over a long period of time, who gradually got their confidence and finally had the birds perching on his arm and going and coming at beck and call and putting hoods over them and so on, as you've seen falconers do, that simple association, rewards and punishments, deprivation of reward, or the giving of a reward, a voice, an action, a tone of voice, the giving of food, or things like this, that's what they use. Now, we can teach parrots to cuss. That's known. You probably heard a lot of funny jokes about that, because parrots will repeat what other people say. But a lot of parents are not really convinced they can teach their children these simple things, like the meaning of the word no. You ever see a parent where you're in a restaurant, The kid picks up the spoon and starts banging away on the table, and the parent says, no. The kid says, oh, puts the spoon down and sits there like this. I doubt it. Very few people have ever in their lives seen a situation like that. But you know that it's possible, believe it or not, to teach a kid as much as you can teach a dog? Do you know that it's possible to teach kids even more than you can teach parrots? Do you know that kids can learn many times faster than falcons and hawks, faster than gophers and rodents like hamsters and mice? Do you know kids are smarter than chimpanzees and orangutans? Do you know that they can learn simple association and through punishments and rewards? And kids can be taught to obey the command, no. They really can. It's just that millions of parents didn't know that that's possible. Or at least if they knew it, they just don't seem to know how to go about it.
Mom, Mommy, and Daddy say that being a parent is a full-time job.
Bye-bye, Johnny. You be a good little boy and do what your mommy says while I'm at work today.
Parents need to help their children reach their full potential. You can give your children a solid foundation in citizenship, morality, work habits, and personality by using the principles of child rearing found in the pages of your Bible. These guidelines are fully explained in our free booklet, The Plain Truth About Child Rearing.
Johnny, why don't you and Zipper run outside and meet Daddy? He'll be coming home any minute now.
The Plain Truth About Child Rearing shows you how to be a full-time parent. The results are rewarding. Send for your free copy of The Plain Truth About Child Rearing.
We sure have a good mommy and daddy, huh, Zipper?
Send your request to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123.
That booklet, which I have right here, the chapters of it that I'd like to tell you a little bit about are What is a Child? How Criminals Are Made, Not Born. How a Child Learns, the methods by which children do learn, and imitation and parental example is one of the most important. How you can punish your children in love, one chapter on how to get results I'd like to talk about briefly, because it shows in one section after another, one subtitle after another, how punishment to be effective should be prompt. It should always be consistent. You should only speak once. Always finish what is started, that is here. Use the right psychology, how positive instruction, forgiveness is necessary, how natural consequences sometimes punish. Isolation is discussed, whether putting them in a corner or a closet, deprivation, never using shortcuts, training your children together as a husband and wife team, never being at cross purposes, never taking sides one against the other. Should children be seen and not heard? What about children's toys? What about their friends and who they play with and their children at play? The entire booklet discusses the truth about child rearing, both from the point of view of child psychology and where it went wrong, and the point of view even of the Bible and biblical instruction about the right way and the right method to rear and to train a child. If you'll write to the address at the close of the program, we'll send you that book. It's about Reader's Digest size. It's absolutely free of charge and no price. Well, I want to wrap up this program with completion of some of the major statements coming to us from young people who themselves had run afoul of the law, who were in the confidence of social workers, who were talking to youngsters who had met the judge because of maybe one or several fairly serious crimes. Crimes serious enough to be arrested and to be hauled in juvenile court for. Now, in every case, these youngsters were asked by social workers trying to compile these statistics how they wish their parents had done it differently. In retrospect, in hindsight, which I said last time is 2020, they were asked, what would you give as advice to parents about how to rear children so things like this don't happen? I want to run through the first 6 points real quickly and then complete the last several here in this program. First, and I've repeated this about 3 times for those who didn't hear the first couple of programs, I'll repeat it again. Keep cool. Don't lose your temper in the crunch. Keep the lid on when things go wrong, the kids say, because they need reassurance from controlled responses. Second, they said parents shouldn't get strung out on booze and too many pills because children are great imitators. They don't go along with this don't do as I do as I say do business. If they get the idea, reaching for a crutch, meaning some medicinal stimulant or repressant. Every time some problem comes along, it's no wonder some of them turn to drugs. The third major point they gave was, don't blow your class. Keep the dignity of parenthood and stay on that pedestal. Your children have put you there, the kids said, because they need someone to look up to. They said, don't try to dress, dance, or talk like the kids do, because you embarrass us and make yourselves look foolish. The kids said the fourth major point was, bug us a little. Be strict and consistent in dishing out discipline. Call our bluff. Make it clear that you mean what you say, and don't be wishy-washy. Lukewarm answers make us uneasy, so show us who the boss is. Isn't it interesting that this is not coming from some ultra-rightist, restrictive, repressant kind of Hitlerian child psychology which advocates every kind of terrible discipline, but rather is coming from the youths themselves who volunteered this information, pouring out their hearts to social workers, not their parents, about the way they wish their parents had been. And it goes diametrically contrary, as you will see, to some of the child psychology that advocates permissiveness and no punishment whatsoever. The kids say, if you show us who's boss, it gives us a feeling of security because then we know we've got some strong supports under us. Then they said, number five, don't compromise. Don't be intimidated by our threats to drop out of school or leave home. Stand firm. If you collapse, we will know we beat you down and we'll not be happy about the victory. Kids don't want everything they ask for. The sixth was, be honest with us. Tell the truth no matter what. Keep the record straight and tell it like it is. The seventh major point to which we had come last time was they wanted the daylight scared out of them when they were wrong. That the parent ought to act like there was really some kind of an infraction, like it was important. Not this calm, let's sit down and discuss it stuff, but if the kid had patently broken something, had lied, cheated, stolen, the kids themselves said, get tough. When a kid is cruel, when he's tough with somebody else, the parent ought to get tough. The kid said, when we need punishment, dish it out. But let us know you still love us, even though we have let you down. It'll make us think twice before we make the same move again. Let us know why what we did was wrong. Impress on us the importance of not repeating such behavior. That's from the kids themselves. The next point was, be generous with praise. If you give us kids a few compliments once in a while, we will be able to accept criticism more readily. Well, you know, there are a lot of parents who never do get around to really appreciating and praising their children. There are too many kids who, no matter what they do, they just cannot satisfy a parent. Now, you have to think about that, because I don't really mean it's the kids at fault in that case. Oh, they've got their faults and problems, no doubt. But there are some parents who have a bizarre desire to relive their lives in junior. This is usually always more heavily noticed when the father is dealing with the son and the mother the daughter. They're very idealistic. Every mistake they made, they want the kid to avoid. Every great fulfillment, reward, and accomplishment they came short of, they want the kid to achieve. And so they are vicariously trying to relive their own lost youth once more in and through their child. The kid comes home with a bad grade. That's a smear on the father's reputation. The father is mad because it makes him look bad. Instead of saying, well, you can probably do a little better next time and work with him and wonder whether or not the parent ought to say, hey, I better start helping you a little bit too if you want me to with your homework, but I'm sure you can do better next time and it's not all that bad. Don't worry about it. Using something to encourage the kid and get him stimulated on his home study, wonder why he's not interested in the class. Is it the parental responsibility? Is it the teacher? Is it the kind of a course? Is it out of the kid's line? Is there some reason there why the kid is getting a poor grade? But the parent, if he takes it as a personal rebuke or slap in the face to his own image, is probably going to be upset. He chews the kid out. He may even get so angry he throws the report card down and says, you dumb clod, you could never learn anything, could you? What are you, peaked head, huh? Dummy, huh? You know, lots of parents talk to children that way. There are lots of Archie Bunkers in the world. There are lots of parents who, no matter what their youngsters do, they are never happy with them. They are never satisfied with the way the kid does it. So the kids themselves say it'd be nice if they could have a compliment once in a while. The parent could be a little more generous with praise, at least when they're doing something right or halfway right, to tell them it's right and to tell them they appreciate it. And that way they might be able to accept criticism a little more readily. The final point they gave was, light a candle, show us the way, tell us God is not dead or sleeping or on vacation. We need to believe in something bigger and stronger than ourselves. Now, that's a kind of a mind bender, isn't it? To come from youngsters who themselves had run into trouble with the law, who were volunteering these ideas, about nine in all, to social workers, who were gaining the confidence of these youngsters who had been arrested for everything from theft to robbery to you name it, any one of the crime categories. It might have been even a very minor thing like maybe vandalism or mischief or something of that nature. But they had been arrested, they had gone down to juvenile court, and now in retrospect, in the rehabilitative process, they're being worked with, not necessarily by parents, but by social workers that are talking to these kids. And you know, it's a kind of a sad commentary that it's almost always true that young people will talk to a neighbor. They will talk to the father or the uncle or the big brother of a friend, one of the peer group in their neighborhood, more quickly and unload about what bugs them about their parents and what their problems are than they will to their own parents. You know, sometimes a parent can find out what they're doing wrong by finding out what a confidant of their own child might know about them, the parent. And if the parent went about it in a way that was a little bit humble and said, look, I'd like to know because I know I'm making a lot of mistakes. There are probably some things I need to learn, some mistakes I can avoid, some things I can do better. So tell me, what's my kid say about me? I'm not asking you for scandal, not asking you to say what kind of names does he call me, but if he ever expresses himself about the way he wishes I was, what are some of the things that he comes up with? You could get quite an education if you are humble enough to ask a person that kind of a question and then sit there and listen. But I'll guarantee you this, in some cases, some parents might have to bring their lunch.
You are the victim. Yes, one way or the other, we all feel the effects of the global increase in crime. Violence fills the pages of all nations' newspapers. Dishonesty and corruption are rampant. Laws go ignored as society suffers. But what can you as a private citizen do to protect yourself and those you love? For the answer to this important question, you need to read the informative booklet, Crime Can Be Stopped. Here's How. This publication also documents the crime picture worldwide, examines our criminal society, and present sound measures you can employ to protect yourself from the increasing menace of crime. Your copy of Crime Can Be Stopped, Here's How, is free and will be sent upon request. So, if you're tired of being the victim, remember, crime can be stopped. Request it now. Send your request to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. That's Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123.
We're not immune to crime. And increasingly, in our society, it is our own young people who are perpetrating major, major proportions or percentages of all of the main crime categories. And it's increasingly a vicious and malicious type of personal crime, of violence against a person, that the young people are involved in. We have to read almost daily in the big city newspapers across our country, from the length and breadth of the United States and across Canada, of vicious thrill kills by youngsters 15, 16, or even younger, who will shoot a toddler on someone's yard, or set fire to a sleeping drunk in Skid Row, or perhaps burn down somebody's garage or home just for the kicks of it. And increasingly now, young gangs roaming the streets in automobiles, shooting people for no cause and no reason whatsoever, except that they may happen to be the member of another race, or they may just happen to be available, like waiting on a bus stop or walking along the street near their own home. Why? Why are we facing such a mountainous tidal wave of crime now? We are reaping the fruits. We are reaping the harvest of something that was sown in American life. And you've got to look at all of America's life. You have to look at American home life and school life and church life and civic and city life. You have to look at our entertainment. You have to look at what flows into the minds of these youngsters through the media. You have to look at the relaxation of laws of decency in the media and the fact that even the Supreme Court can't really tell you what's dirty anymore. That men who will look at blatant and prurient obscenity hour after hour after hour of the rawest, just plain out-and-out sex acts and so on, can't really tell whether or not that is dirty. They don't seem to know what is dirty and what is not. And so, consequently, those that are in the business of trying to sell products, to get ratings for themselves, to pack the movie houses with millions upon millions of viewers, and to make millions upon millions of dollars, are going to give the public what the public wants. And the public's got an appetite anymore, just about like hogs in the waller or the slop trough. Because an awful lot of people are willing, when it comes to mental exercises, to eat garbage. They would just as soon dwell on swill and slop as they would a New York cut steak and a baked potato. And I'm talking now intellectually in the entertainment media and in what people like to do with their leisure time. So when you have teenagers, 16, 17, 18, going to motion pictures where they see giant shootouts with police often as not the targets, and where you see somebody submachine gun somebody else half to death, or you're seeing people in the total nude wrestling around under the sheet or outside of it, on top of it like as not, you're seeing perversity, homosexuality, you're seeing hintings even at other kinds of assorted and perverted sex-related crimes. Is it then any wonder, since we have sown the wind, that we are now reaping the whirlwind? Is it any wonder, and is there any connection between the fact of progressive education, permissiveness, growing laxity in courts, and the whole system of juvenile correction, and the disintegration and the breakup of the American home, of the onslaught of divorce, of the tearing apart of the very foundation of society, which is the American home? Is there any connection between all of this put together, the disruption in the home, the lack of power and authority of the pulpit and the church, disruption in the school because schools have had their teeth pulled and have not been able to exert the kind of authoritative influence they should have, and then comes entertainment and the media. Is it any wonder that we've got a mountainous onslaught of youthful crime? Well, I say that cause and effect ought to be very plain to practically anybody. Maybe you think I'm sounding off, and maybe I am, but I think it's about time somebody did. Write for these booklets on Crime Can Be Stopped, Here's How, and the booklet on the plain truth about child rearing. I'd like to take just a few moments to discuss that, because this 142-page book is really a condensation of the thesis that I prepared in many years of study and research into the question of child psychology. I've been able to quote from this, to utilize it for many, many years since that intensive study, some of the most mind-bending quotations I've ever heard in all of my life, that are given to you in this booklet, or book really, it's more of a thick book about the size of a Reader's Digest magazine, The Plain Truth About Child Rearing. There has never been a time in our society when the truth about child rearing was any more sorely needed. I have had letters from tens of thousands of parents around the world, from far off New Zealand and from European countries, from Australia, from the Philippines, from South Africa, African countries, from all over the United States and Canada, telling me what a help, what an inspiration, what a daily handbook of solid, sound, common sense advice this book on the plain truth about child rearing has been to them. All you need to do to receive this booklet is to give us the call letters of your station. We'd like that, if you would please, the call letters of your radio station. While you're at it, why don't you request the current number of the plain truth and find that there is a solution beyond human understanding. And we talk in The Plain Truth, plainly, even about Bible prophecy and about an ultimate solution beyond the acknowledgement of today's news media, because they simply do not acknowledge God or Bible prophecy. And that's what you will read in The Plain Truth. It is plain truth, straight from the shoulder, plain talk. I hope you'll write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123.